And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary. It's my co-host, Dan Ford. How you doing, Dan?
Doing the best I can. Doing the best I can. Keep on living.
Dan, I've been sifting through the news today. Let's see if I can find something. Anything in the news today that surprised you? Trying to do this off the top of my head. I couldn't think of anything.
Yeah, it's just been a really slow news week. Like, nothing major has happened at all, anywhere. It's just, it's just been really, really slow. You picked a great week to go on vacation as well.
I did. I want to lead off with this, though. How about the Michael Phelps racing the shark controversy? How many people really thought he was going to race an animal that would die if it stopped swimming in a fair race?
Look, tell me all about this.
I didn't watch a minute of it, but apparently Michael Phelps raced a computer-generated shark on Shark Week or something.
Well, that's not what people expected then.
No. It was like a simulation. It's like, get this nerd number shit out of here. I want to see a man race a shark.
Yeah. A man's going to race a shark and then have him race a computer. That ain't what you promised.
An animal that dies if it stops moving, I believe, Dan. Like,
well, it's not like it. If it stops moving, it blows up like in Speed.
Yeah, but
like it just can't breathe.
Yeah. So it's like you expect man, like that's the arrogance of man, Dan, is to race an animal that would literally die if it stopped moving and think you're going to beat it. Just let the sharks have it, you know? Wouldn't some pothead beating sharks?
I blame that on Bobby Flay. I feel like Bobby Flay ruined our culture by coming up with a television show where basically he would show up to your, like, grandma's house, find out, like, what her best pie was, and then bake a pie better than it and go, ha ha! You have nothing, old woman! I'm taking it! You thought you had the best pie! No, my pie is better! Ha ha!
Bobby Flay is a menace, Dan. Another sports-related thing I want to touch on, Dan. Just started watching a little show called The Mike Tyson Mysteries, and this is the best outlet I've ever seen for a former pro boxer. I know I'm a little late on this one, but great show. Check it out. Never seen Mike Tyson Mysteries, Dan?
No, I haven't.
I assume it's just
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, but like really fucked up. Norm MacDonald plays a pigeon. It's pretty fun.
Oh, has it got that South Park humor?
Like that Adult Swim weird.
Like really random. It's like really, really random.
Yeah, like that Adult Swim humor. Like if you're not kind of inebriated, you're probably not going
to
like it.
Well, it's basically like, you know, that great shirt that they used to have at Hot Topic, Can't Sleep, Clowns Will Eat Me, but like a TV show.
Yeah. Recommend that. And to cap off our entertainment discussion, Dan, I guess you didn't see Ballers this week. Because they introduced one of my favorite actors ever, Steve Guttenberg.
Well, he's a casino. The Goose!
Yes.
The Goose is loose!
So I'm going to recommend you to start watching Ballers. I think it's time to pony up for HBO and watch some Ballers with me.
I don't know. There's not, like, you know, I'm not interested in watching dragons fuck, so I don't know if HBO is right for me.
Yeah, you know, that's one more thing I do want to lead off on. Did you see the FS1 story this week about how maybe they want to get a little more edgy?
How are they going to get edgier? They've got Clay Travis saying the South will rise again.
Well, you're going to have Clay Travis
saying where do you go from that?
It's just 30 minutes of Clay Travis saying the N-word is the new show.
Like I don't know what Fox Sports thinks is going to be edgier than what they've got.
They're going to have Jason Whitlock and Clay Travis debate race issues.
Well, that'll be good. It's just like them having a race to see who can blame black people for more stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's Clay Travis is going to do every show in blackface. He's going to create a new
Jason Whitlock's going to get that Sammy Sosa surgery.
Yes.
That he's been dreaming of all these years.
What could be the name of Clay Travis's offensive black character and blackface character? Like, Amos Travis? Like, golly! That's how he would talk.
His name would just be Amos Andy.
Amos Andy. Oh, but Dan, speaking of controversial stuff, let's jump into the group of five. The first.
Very controversial, the group of five.
Probably the most controversial topic we'll ever discuss. This is the kickoff to our big college football previews, Dan, and we're gonna have some guests from Craig when we cover. We're gonna go conference by conference, except for the group of five. We're gonna lump you on together because you don't matter. Sorry, that's life. You know,
look, you're used. Look, guys, you're used to sharing facilities at this point. Yeah. Like,
and
it's
you
not.
And you shouldn't get that mad, because Group of Five is about having fun. But we're going to preview each major conference for the next couple of weeks, and I'm pretty excited. We're going to have some guests. It's going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, it's always, it was our favorite thing we did last year. Now, obviously, not as many people got to hear it, because that was when we first started the show up. We weren't on beautifulhalfguarded.com.
We went from 5 to 15 in a year, Dan. Wow. But yeah, I'm really excited to get some special guests and maybe the return of West Coast West. He hasn't signed the contract yet that we think we got.
Sure. Sure. He's looking back and forth at the crowd and deciding whether he'll stick his hand out like
he's
Macho
deciding,
Man.
If our dick pics pay off, he will be back. Yeah.
West Destiny has guaranteed he will either slap our face or shake our hand. He's made that guarantee. And we're gonna find out which right here tonight on WCW Saturday night.
But Dan, if you're on the WCW Power Hour, if you will, on WGN, but Dan, explain to me, let's say I'm your casual, let's say I'm a dumb Georgia fan, and I don't know what the Group of Five, what's this Group of Five? Is that some sort of minority thing? What is this? Is this where Grambling comes from?
Sure. Like, yeah, this is the league Grambling said. No, the Group of Five is just the informal name of the five conferences that don't have Power Five status. Basically, they don't have the same level of TV money, they don't have the same bowl access, but...
And they're not really getting considered for the playoffs unless they have a spectacular season.
But per the college football rules, the highest ranked team in the Group of Five gets an automatic bid to a major bowl.
Yeah.
So one of these teams will be playing in, I think it's the Sugar Bowl this year?
Yeah, it's usually like the Sugar Fiesta Bowl, though, right? Like,
well, I think just the first couple of years it was the Orange Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl because those are the two lowest level bowls.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be either the Sugar Bowl or the Cotton Bowl this year. I don't think they'll ever get to play in the Rose Bowl.
Well, we've seen this in the past in the Sugar Bowl, Dan, because we saw, I think, when Hawaii played Georgia one year. I think the most famous was probably the Boise State, Oklahoma, in the Fiesta Bowl.
That was before the current rules, but
that's where the rule was adapted from. If you saw this in the past, it's similar to that, basically.
It was sort of a bone that was thrown at these schools when the playoffs started. So it's like, hey, we'll let you play at a major bowl. One of you will get to play there. Do not expect a playoff spot.
Yeah. Unless a bunch of weird shit happens, you're not getting it.
Yeah, basically, way, like, though, 1984 kind of has to rehappen, has to happen again. Yeah.
But in a way, it is almost like going to the championship game for these schools, because you are playing in a big bowl game. That's a lot of money for your school and your conference.
And for your conference, yeah. Yeah. The conference gets a cut of that.
But And just the get back, the stuff players get at the Sugar Bowl is way better than the stuff the players get at the Little Caesars Bowl or the HalfGuarded.com Bowl.
The formerly known as the Bitcoin Bowl.
Yes. If you're a player, it's probably going to be the best experience of your life, more than likely, in college football. If you're one of these guys from, like, Northern Illinois, this is going to be a pretty cool thing. So that's the bone you throw. That's what these guys are playing for, Dan.
I think there's a lot of schools, in particularly in the AAC, but there's some in the Mountain West as well, who are like, if we go undefeated, and we get a little bit of luck, like, we could make the playoffs. Yeah. Like, I think going into this year, South Florida, Memphis, and Houston, like, they're all thinking to themselves, look, if everything breaks the right way, we could.
I think we'll get this more in our previews. This is probably the 1 year recent memory where you can't really point to a team and say they're definitely going to go undefeated. I don't think – hot take right now, I don't think we'll have an undefeated Power 5 team.
Yeah, I mean, there's no guarantees. Ohio State and Michigan one of them is going to lose. One of them's got to beat the other.
And I think Alabama's going to have a bit of a drop, probably like a two-loss season for them, hopefully. So we'll see something weird like that. Maybe probably not a team in the ACC going undefeated, because there's a lot of good teams in the ACC, obviously. But let's focus, Dan. I want to focus. We're going to talk Group of Five now. Sorry. We're gonna get back to y'all. So let's start with this, Dan. What teams do you think will have the best shot at going to the Sugar Bowl and playing that big game? Give me your five.
I would say it would go Memphis. It would go USF. You're talking about best odds to make the bowl game, right? Like
not the best to odds to go to the Sugar Bowl, not the playoffs. That's a pipe. We'll talk about
that. Yeah, that's a pot shot thing.
Yeah.
I would say it would be USF, Memphis, San Diego State, Boise. I would give them a shot at it in Colorado State. I think that's who I know.
Because last year, who was the big team? It was Row the Boat guy. Totally, I forgot where he coached.
Yeah, Western Michigan.
Yeah, we will see Western Michigan back in it.
No. They're good. They're a good candidate for like the complete program collapse.
Yeah.
I would all if I had to pick a six, you know, Appalachian and Boise or Appalachian and Georgia Southern, like they're both really good programs.
Yeah,
it's
just Southern.
There's a delineation in the group of five where the AAC and the Mountain West are above the other three, which like the other three for whatever, you know, I don't know if there's a great reason for this or not. I mean, obviously the American Conference used to be the Big East, so obviously that there's a bit more cachet. There's programs with a little bit more money behind them.
Yeah,
but you know, you look at like the Sun Belt and Conference USA kind of cannibalize the same region. And then you have the MAC, which none of those programs have any fans, and the MAC really shouldn't exist.
You say it as a guy who probably isn't gamble enough. The MAC is there for you to get your
The MAC is great for people who don't give a damn about what happens other than gambling.
Yes.
None of those schools should be playing in Division 1A football.
The MAC being on TV, Dan, is probably the best example of why gambling does keep football going.
Sure. Because none of those schools have fans.
Yeah.
Like, none of those schools can sell more than, like, 25,000. Like, when you look at every year, you know, there's NCAA rules that you have to average, I think, 15,000 fans per game every 2 years.
Yeah.
All the teams are always on the bubble of not making it. It's, like, five of them are in the MAC.
Well, and to be fair, the schools sound like they'd be miserable to go to a game in November outside.
And to be fair, the MAC has gone – it has – done a strategy as far as TV money that has made it impossible for them to draw because their games are on in like Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and it's like, well, no students are going to be able to come.
And more probably no alumni can come because, you know, in theory they should have jobs.
Sure, like in theory, but, you know, you've got a Northern Illinois grad, you know, degree, so there's no, you know, you've got no guarantee.
Is that a bad degree, though?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's
like
not
the
great.
Equivalent of like maybe like a Georgia Southern degree here in Georgia.
Well, here's the difference. One, Georgia Southern's a teaching school, so that you got that going for you. But two, like Georgia Southern is not a bad place to live. Have you ever been to Northern Illinois or Southern Indiana?
I don't know. Have you ever been to Statesboro, Dan? Because the funnest thing to do there is go to the Zaxby's, get pissed drunk, or go to rehab.
All I know is what their former coach that famous quote he had is that all the girls are pretty and 55% of the school is girls. and so
why you need to come here? But Dan, let's kick off with the Sun Belt. A lot of people kick off the American. I want to save them for last. Let's talk Sun Belt first. Who are we looking out for this year in the Sun Belt? You mentioned Southern on reputation, but I think a lot of people see Southern kind of in the downturn right now because of bad coaching hires and completely changing the way you think of Southern football.
Well, they've made it. They kind of seem like they fixed that. They went and got Brian Cook from Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
He's been Paul Johnson's offensive coordinator the last 2 years now. Before that, he was ABAC's coach. He took over as offensive coordinator a year or two ago, and now he's moved on to Georgia Southern to run the show. So I would say Georgia Southern could get a bounce back just because they're getting back to running the triple option. Last year they experimented with being more of a pass happy team. So I would throw Georgia Southern in there as a team to like they're going to be a little bit more under the radar because they had a bad year last year, but they could make some noise by going back to what they've been traditionally successful at.
Who's our repeating Sun Belt champ?
The two teams to beat are going to be Troy and Appalachian.
Yeah,
Troy looks like they're going to have the best team on paper, but Appalachian State's got, you know, it's hard to bet against Appalachian State.
Yeah.
Like, Appalachian State, they've been good every year they've been in the league, and it's kind of their thing to, like, okay, prove you can beat them sort of thing at this point. And, you know, maybe Troy can do that, but that's really going to be the race to the to see who can get it. It's going to be Troy and Appalachian.
Well, and it's a unique environment, though, when you go to App State.
You got the elevation, you're in the mountains, and they have a great – I would say they probably have the best student environment.
It's probably them or Southern probably have two of the best, in theory, harder places to play in terms of crowd noise.
You know, Appalachian, if you look at how they divvy up their tickets, they actually give some of the best tickets in the stadium to the students, which is a novel little idea that they came up with years ago to get more – noise and more atmosphere at their football games, and it's worked, and they've stuck with it as a tradition. And Appalachian, it's weird because to be a lower level school, you'd think that the kids who go to Appalachian wouldn't care about sports, but Appalachian does have a student body that wants to that comes out to support the football team.
No, and it's well, Dan, and the thing with Appalachian is like it's up on the mountains, so sometimes there ain't much else to do but go to the football game.
Well, there's a lot of
there might not be a lot of stuff to do that you can tell your mom about that.
Sure.
so it is a good environment, I think, to build a fun football program. You know, we've seen it. I think there are people who do go to App State now just because of their football team. You know, that Michigan game really put them on the map, you know.
Yeah, I mean it's when you beat the one of the most famous programs in the country, it'll put you on the map a little bit.
Yeah.
But Troy is team loaded with talent this year. Obviously, they're in your neck of the woods, Southern Alabama. That's basically where you live.
Close.
Yeah, I mean you love to go to Southern Alabama every chance you get.
Oh shit. Don't mind. Sorry about that. Another school I'm interested in, the school actually where I do live, Dan, that's Georgia State, who had success 2 years ago, but kind of fell off pretty hard after that. Any news for young Georgia State in that program?
Well, they're picked to finish ninth in the league, so that's not great.
Yeah, all I know about this program is that they're moving into the old Turner Field, and I think that will help with environment for Georgia State and making a program.
It can't be worse. There's nothing worse than being in, like, the Georgia Dome when you have 10,000 people there.
Yeah, I think that's been killer for them, and that's not what makes Sun Belt fun or a lot of these mid-major schools fun, Dan, is maybe have smaller stadiums where you get more noise and atmosphere. But when you're in a big dome with about 5,000 people in there, it's just not as fun.
Look, here's the other thing they got going for them at Georgia State. They're not Texas State, which is picked to be the worst team in the Sun Belt, and not quite sure why it exists. Again, you look at a school like Louisiana Monroe, I'm not sure why they're in FBS football. They have no money. They're not in a place anybody wants to move to. Like, they have no – I cannot figure out why Louisiana Monroe has a team trying to play major football. It never has made sense to me. I guess the big story with the Sun Belt, other than who's going to win it, which every conference wonders about, is how's Coastal Carolina going to do? You know, this is going to be Coastal Carolina's first season in FBS. They're led by their football coach, who's the former CEO of TD Ameritrade. Who decided to get back into coaching after leaving the sport in the 80s to go work on Wall Street. And, Joe Moglia decided to come back to football.
So essentially there's an 80s movie. There's an 80s movie going around Coastal Carolina. This is like an 80s Rodney Dangerfield movie, essentially, what we have here.
Yeah, and like something Rodney Dangerfield would do, he just bought himself a job. Like, Coastal Carolina has no money. And Coastal Carolina's in my neck of the woods. I live pretty close to Myrtle Beach. Coastal Carolina is right outside of Myrtle Beach in Conway, South Carolina. And they actually the college shares some facilities with the community college that is right next door. A lot of their dormitories are, or at least when I was going over there as a college kid, going to see baseball games and whatnot, a lot of their classrooms were double wides. that they called bungalows, as a euphemism. But Joe Moglia, being a billionaire, just wrote them a fat check that they used to build, you know, permanent dorms and permanent classrooms, and they gave him the football coaching job because he wanted a football job badly enough. And he's turned them into a very successful program at the FCS level. You know, I think the lowest number of games he won in any year was 9. He won double digits, I think, every year but one. He made the playoffs every year that they were eligible to make the playoffs. He's been extremely successful at that level. And he's got a lot of very unique ideas about football. You know, he famously will not let his guys, his coaches, work after 6 p.m. He makes them go, you know, he basically, he has recruiting meetings where they discuss the players they want to recruit, and he makes them boil down what they think about the player down to no more than 7 words. Because he doesn't want, he thinks that so many football coaches overthink and spend hours upon hours upon hours working on stuff that doesn't actually do anything for them. So he's got a lot of really novel ideas about football, and he's very interesting to hear that, to see this guy who, I mean, he coached football until he went into Wall Street, but who's spent a life being very successful at that, then come to football and be like, yeah, actually, like, a lot of you guys don't really know what you're doing. Here's how to do it. And we'll see if he... We'll see if he's a disruptor or if he's a pretender who gets run out of the.
But we don't think maybe we don't see maybe Arkansas State continuing to have their big success in the Sun Belt.
I mean, Arkansas State's going to be really fun offensively. I don't know if they're going to have the complete team. I mean, Troy and Appalachian look more complete.
What about our boys in Idaho?
I mean, it's Idaho's last run. Yeah. It would be a great story if Idaho won the league in their last year in FBS.
Won 9 games last year. People forget that.
Yeah, I mean, they have a chance to go out on top and win the, you know, if they win the Sun Belt, they go back, they go to the FCS next year. I believe they're joining the West Coast Conference, if I'm not mistaken. Or no, they're joining the Big Sky. Excuse me.
Same thing. It's all the same.
They're very different. They're very, very different. I'm pretty sure the West Coast Conference is all private.
They're in that category of not matters, are they?
Well, look, all things matter. God cares about
all
them.
Things matter.
Yeah. Oh, God, I just realized what I said. you know, Idaho would be the best story. If you want to know what would be the best possible story for the Sun Belt in 2017, it would be Idaho winning it all.
Well, I think the best would be if New Mexico State won, because then a lot of people would know that New Mexico State had a football
team. I mean, it's Idaho's last chance. Like, it's either this year or they never win a conference in FBS football.
Yeah. But, Dan, let's jump over now. I want to kind of stay in the West with Idaho, but the Mountain West. Last year is where we saw the big story of Wyoming kind of came out of nowhere and shocked a lot of people. Do you think we'll see Wyoming kind of continue their success? I believe they didn't lose their quarterback.
Well, they've got a tremendous quarterback, and he's probably the best player in the conference, I would say. You know, he's getting a lot of, like, NFL scouts looking at him. It's very similar to what, you know, the – feller at Philadelphia who played for Craig Bowl at North Dakota State. Carson Wentz, you know, who played for the Wyoming coach Craig Bowl when he was the head coach at North Dakota State. We've seen him being able to develop quarterbacks and find them even though he's coaching in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, Wyoming's going to score a lot of points. Now, Craig Bowl's big thing that he's famous for is his ability to create defenses. North Dakota State, they built – tremendous defenses that just smother teams and continue to smother teams. Yeah. We have yet to see Craig Bowl build a defense in the FBS. So if he can put a defense to go with that offense, yeah, they could win the league. They could easily jump up and take this league, because offensively last year they were outstanding. They just got to have something defensively.
Who else in the Mountain?
I mean, that's the sentimental pick.
Who else are we looking in the Mountain? Like, do we think Boise will do better in conference? They won 10 games last year, Dan, but most of those wins didn't come in the conference.
Well, the story of the Mountain West the past few years is that teams know, like, the top teams in the Mountain West no longer fear Boise.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I believe the San Diego State coach even said that. You know, there was a comment he made about a year and a half ago where he said, you know, when Boise first joined the Mountain West from the WAC, everybody in the Mountain West was kind of terrified of them. mm-hmm. and just assumed that they were just going to come in and wreck them. But what's happened is that as the rest of the league has sort of gotten better, we've seen programs like San Diego State that always had potential to be a better program than they traditionally are actually start to grow and rise up. You know, they're not looking at Boise State and going, oh, we don't have a chance. Oh, Boise's going to kill us. I don't think the fear factor is there anymore. I don't think the intimidation factor Boise used to have is there anymore. I think teams like San Diego State, Colorado State, they look at their teams and they go, yeah, we can do it. You look at Colorado State, their team is kind of filled with SEC transfers because they've just had two back-to-back high-profile SEC offensive coordinators as head coach. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's where Jim McElwain came. That's where, that Florida got him from. Before that, he was the offensive coordinator for Nick Saban's Alabama, and now, they've replaced Jim McElwain with Mike Bobo, longtime Georgia offensive coordinator. And they have – both of those guys have set a standard at Colorado State of raising that talent level much higher than a lot of their peers in the Mountain West are able to get to. So Colorado State, I mean, they could be very, very good this year. And back in the 90s, late 80s, when Colorado State was really pretty good as a mid-major, their home field advantage was always very, they've got that thin air, they've got that high altitude in Colorado Springs. They can be very, if they're good, they can be very difficult to play at home. Boise and San Diego State better be ready. I mean, those two are the teams, they're the two, Boise State and San Diego State. Obviously, those are usually the two teams to beat now. Boise's always the team.
San Diego State's, I think, advantage comes in here was that the Mountain West was a much weaker division last year. I think Boise was the only team with a record above 500. I think Hawaii came in second at 7-7.
Yeah, I mean, San Diego State does have the easier road in that division. But San Jose State looking like they might be, getting a little bit better, climbing up out of a hole that they fell into when their coach left to go. Mike McIntyre went to Colorado. They might be showing some signs of life. UNLV is showing a few signs of life. They're in a slow build process. And Hawaii's not looking too bad. So that side of the division may be a little bit better this year. But, yeah, the strength is the mountain side. I mean, you look at the mountain side, you've got Colorado State, you've got Boise, you've got Wyoming scoring all those points.
You've got Air Force.
You've got Air Force. They're going to run
New
the
Mexico,
option
Dan,
every year.
In fact, on the mountain side, only one team finished with the sub-500 record. That was Utah State at 3-9. Colorado State at 7-6.
And Utah State was just, really unlucky last year.
Yeah.
They just basically had every bounce go the wrong way, and they had injury problems. They were actually pretty good. You could see the entire Western Mountain, the entire Mountain Division finishing above 500. I think the overall thing about the Mountain West, though, is the run game. You have so many good running teams in the Mountain West. Because you've got San Diego State, which basically runs an old-fashioned pro-style lineup in the I formation and hand-it-off type offense. If you're somebody who misses, who watches spread football and goes, this is bullshit, watch San Diego State. They're like the offense time for God.
Yeah.
New Mexico State and Air Force both run the option.
University
Air Force runs it. New Mexico runs the option out of the pistol with head coach Bob Davie, the former head coach of Notre Dame. And Air Force, obviously, they've been running, a multiple formation option offense for about 30 years now. So you are going to see a variety of ways to run the football when you tune into Mountain West football. And obviously, you're going to watch Boise, who are going to line up in 75 formations. They're going to shift every play. And at the end of the day, the play call is probably going to be inside zone.
Yeah. Done
doing all that bull crap.
Let's jump to Conference USA now. Probably besides the American, maybe one of the most well-known conferences, but maybe the worst.
I would say they are definitely the worst.
Yeah.
The difference between Conference USA and the MAC, I guess, is that the Conference USA tends to have better bell cow. Mm-hmm. But I think this year they're kind of in the same position as the MAC, where their best team, got their coach poached, And we're not quite sure how good Western Kentucky is going to be without, you know, their head coach.
What about Old Dominion Dan, who finished 10-3 last year? Which is how long have they been at the FCS?
That is the emptiest. That is the emptiest 10-3 in the history of 10-3.
Didn't they play mostly an FBS schedule last year or something?
Yeah, they've only been FBS for a couple of years now. I believe their first year in FBS was 2014. Before that, their program has started from scratch. They're kind of similar to say South Alabama, and Georgia State. They started their program up around the same time,
yeah,
and then jumped to FBS quickly. Old Dominion, I mean, they should be right around the middle of the league. You know, the two teams that are going to be the best two teams are Western Kentucky and Louisiana Tech. I mean, Western Kentucky had such a great offense last year, and they brought enough of it back that I would kind of expect them to still be able to be good even with an inferior coach, at least for a year, especially in this terrible league. Louisiana Tech's a sure bet because they didn't lose their head coach, and they were pretty good last year. So, when you look at the Conference USA and you look at what program has the best football infrastructure, it's probably Louisiana Tech. You know, they've been playing football longer than a lot of the schools in Conference USA.
What about the Marshall?
Marshall's terrible. I mean, I don't know.
But
probably
the school I'd look there and say, like, maybe they have the best reputation, though.
Probably, but that's mostly because of a movie that came out, like, a decade and a half ago.
Well, no, I was thinking, like, you had Chad Pennington, Byron Leftwich, what, Randy Moss. There's been a lot of, maybe I'm just old, but it seems like there's been a lot of talent.
Yeah, all those guys like haven't been on campus in like 20 years, brother.
Yeah, that's true.
we were like 7 when those guys were playing football for Marshall.
What about your new favorite school, Dan? Charlotte. Tell us a little bit more about Charlotte.
There is not a school that makes less sense than Charlotte as far as being a football school because it's a commuter college.
Yeah,
they don't really have a whole lot of on-campus housing. Most of the people live off campus, although they do tend to all live on the same side of town, so they're not too far away. They pretty much everybody who goes to UNC Charlotte, they're people who didn't get into Carolina and they didn't get into NC State, and they have season tickets to either of those two schools, or they have season tickets to Clemson or South Carolina. Like they either go to South Carolina games, Clemson games, Carolina games, or NC State games every weekend.
And
Charlotte is just like – and they all will tell you that, yeah, I'm working on my stuff to transfer. You know, like they're those – it's like you're like a fifth-year senior, brother. Like it's too late to transfer. No, I'm still working on it.
But, Dan, I think a lot of people also be entered in Conference USA because our boy, Lane Kiffin, will make his debut in this conference. Yeah,
I think the more interesting one is Butch Jones at Florida International than Lane Kiffin because, for one, Butch Jones has been a successful football coach before, and Lane Kiffin hasn't. And two, he looks like he's got a little bit better team going there. Like
Butch Davis.
Yeah, Butch Davis.
Yeah, Butch Jones is not.
Did I say Butch Jones?
He'll be in
Conference
USA next year.
Yeah, there's too many. There's only two Butches in the entire world. It's easy to get them confused. Butch Davis. I think Butch Davis will be able to have a little bit more success at Florida International because their former coach, Ron Turner, was a lot more philosophically similar to Butch Davis. So, like, he's not having to completely change the entire roster to fit what he wants to be. He's just coming in and sort of – he's a better coach, obviously, than Ron Turner. And he's bringing in a little bit higher caliber of player. But the guys on campus are not going to be a bunch of guys ill-suited to play in his style of team, if that makes any sense. Whereas, like, Lane Kiffin seems like he's walked onto Florida Atlantic and just ditched everything they had going for them and then, you know, brought in a bunch of creeps, you know, who can't get a job anywhere else.
They didn't have a lot going for them. I believe Florida Atlantic won 2 games in the conference last year.
Three games. I mean, they're a bad team. And, again, one of the themes with Conference USA is why does this school exist again? Why is there a football team in Boca Raton? The average age at Boca Raton is like 68 years old. Like, what community are you planning to come to these football games? All of them can't be out in the sun. They have medication they have to worry about.
So Speaking of medication, Dan, let's jump to the MAC.
Well, we can't move off of Conference USA before we talk about the return of University of Alabama Birmingham. They returned to FBS football after a few years of not having a football team because Bear Bryant's, Waterhead son played some political bullshit to get their football program canceled. Well,
though, Alabama in the past, didn't they keep Jimbo Fisher from coming to UAB?
Yes.
Actually, back in the day.
Yes, that is. Yeah, Jimbo Fisher was going to leave Alabama to go take the, or was going to leave LSU to go take the UAB job.
And was blocked by the Alabama
was blocked board of by the Board of Trustees, which is the Board of Trustees who are in charge of UAB are actually the Alabama University Board of Trustees. There's only one member of the board of the Alabama University System Board of Trustees who's from UAB. I think there's another school
in
that system.
No, South Alabama.
No. It's a University of Alabama city. I think it's University of Alabama Montgomery.
Yeah.
I think it's either Huntsville or Montgomery.
I was just in Alabama. I should know. But God, that's an awful state.
Yeah, and I think those are the only three in the University of Alabama system because South Alabama's not in that system, Auburn's not obviously not in that system, and Troy's not in that system. You know, they're all in a different university, publicly funded system, and so Alabama doesn't have the control over them that they do over over Birmingham, and which is, you know, if you listen to the conspiracy theories, the only reason the University of Alabama trustees ever allowed UAB to have a football program in the first place was so that there'd be a tenant for Legion Field, which the Bryan family has ownership points in, and so they would get the rent. And then now that, you know, Legion Field is ending its usability, they tried to kill off UAB rather than let them build an on-campus stadium and potentially get better and suck away some players. I mean, the idea that UAB was going to be taking players that could theoretically play at Alabama was very funny to me.
It kind of shows you, Dan, how crazy it's going to be at Alabama when Saban leaves and they kind of drop down a few spots.
Yeah.
You're going to see people jumping off the buildings. You know, the highest building in Birmingham, 7 stories. It's going to be nuts.
Yeah, and these, like, half-wit mongoloid, you know, incest cases who run the state of Alabama, like, they haven't been able to exert any control over the University of Alabama football program for so long because Nick Saban runs that with an iron hand.
Yeah.
The minute, you know, the dictator's gone, or the Nicktator, or whatever terrible nickname you want to get him, the minute he's gone, all of this creative energy they've utilized to, you know, basically fuck UAB up the ass, now they'll start using it for their plans to make Alabama, you know, the best thing in the world. And it'll probably backfire because, again, they're all very, very stupid.
Speaking of stupid, now let's jump over to the Mid-American Conference. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what it stands for, Mid-America.
Here we go.
This
was last year.
Omaha, somewhere in Middle America.
This is where we saw our Group of Five champion, if you will, Western Michigan. Went to the big bowl game and lost to Wisconsin. We expect to see a drop off there for Western Michigan, though. Correct.
Yeah, I mean they've got a lot of talent though. So if they're the thing with Western Michigan is that he recruited such a high level of talent there compared to the rest of the MAC, that they might actually be able to still be good for a year or two just based off that huge talent advantage. The problem, though, is that P.J. Fleck was such a singular motivational force that you kind of think that without him there, I mean, it's not like he's some great X's and O's coach, but without him, you know, standing up and getting the guys to believe that, hey, Western Michigan is a place where you can win games at, you kind of wonder if it's going to crumble without him there. But the talent is there. If it just ends up being a talent contest, Western Michigan wins the league easily.
Yeah.
We don't play the games on paper. Toledo is probably the best bet to win the MAC.
Yeah.
But this is the league every year where teams can rise and fall, and you know who ends up on the bottom and who ends up on the top
I put my money on Buffalo.
From one year to the next.
I think this is your Buffalo. Really takes off.
Buffalo is picked to finish 11th out of 12th, so that is ballsy.
Yeah, that's my pick. I got Buffalo. Some shock in the world this year. The Blue Bison.
Well, Lance Leopold, he was very, very successful at Division III, and, obviously when he came to Buffalo, he was expecting it to be a slow build. He was expecting to have time. There's obviously no talk of him being run out of time. But, I mean, it's the Mac. Yeah. He could, you know, and he's been a defensive wizard at the lower levels of football. Maybe he turns Buffalo into a stingy defense, and they ride that all the way to the top.
Okay, Tim, and let's jump finally now to kind of the main of that, the American Athletic Conference, formerly the Big East. This is last year we saw our champion was Temple, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I don't watch this show, but American is the Game of Thrones of college football, where everybody wants to, like, you either win or you die. Is that the what happens when you play the Game of Thrones?
I guess. If you've never watched Game of Thrones, that's what you would think about it, yes.
The thing about the American is that every team in it thinks they can join a Power 5 conference.
Yeah.
And every coach who coaches there expects to be coaching at a Power 5 team next year.
Yeah.
And the thing is that the coaches are probably right. Like, every year, you know, a bunch of coaches from this team gets hired off because you're a step ahead of those other, you know, group of five leagues. And you're in the backyards of some powerful programs, and somebody's going to win the league every year, and then that guy becomes an attractive choice. You know, it's just the way it is, and there's a reason why Charlie Strong, you know, out of all the potential jobs he could have had, picked USF, because he's like, that's a place I can win at, and end up, you know, back in a major conference.
And to be fair, USF was an 11-win team last year, 11-2.
They were very, very good. Their coach got the Oregon job for a reason.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can see Charlie Strong really not messing with that offense, because that offense evolved a lot under Willie Taggart. When Willie Taggart first came in, he was basically just running the Jim Harbaugh Stanford offense. He found he had a difficult time getting the offensive linemen to make it work in the state of Florida. So he switched it up to like this, what Stephen Godfrey of SB Nation called speed smash. A lot of shotgun, a lot of zone read, but a lot of, like, big dudes lining up, and a lot of, like, you know, motion. Like, they'll line up with four guys spread out, but, like, three of them are tight ends, and one of them will motion right before the snap into, like, a fullback spot, and then they just mash you. So they combine, like, some of the best elements of a big physical team.
Yeah,
with a shotgun spread offense, and I could see that really appealing to Charlie Strong, and him not wanting to mess with that too much.
No,
and we already know we've always known Charlie Strong can build a defense, and he obviously he made his name recruiting Florida for decades.
But I think, Dan, the hot picks though will be on the other side of what's called the American West, and that's where your Navies are, that's where Houston is, that's where Memphis is. He's a pro in Tulsa, who had a pretty decent season last year.
Yeah, and Tulsa. I mean, if you were asking me what team is going to lose the Game of Thrones and be beheaded, and which team is going to start asserting themselves as a possible winner of the Game of Thrones, because again, I'm all about the thrones. That's all. That's me now. Tulsa feels like a team that could definitely pop up, and Houston. I do not like Major Applewhite as a hire. I don't think he's. I think that was a mistake. I think that was hey, let's hire a guy who's been here while we were good. But if you look at Major Applewhite's coaching career, he's gotten a lot of opportunities and a lot of high-profile jobs, and a lot of big-name coaches gave him a chance, and his offenses have never been all that good, and I'm not really sure how he's going to keep this Tom Herman era running there. Whereas Tulsa, you know, Montgomery has been there for a few years now. He basically took that Baylor offense. He left Baylor as offensive coordinator to come to Tulsa as head coach about 2 years ago now. Yeah. And he has fully downloaded that Baylor offense into Tulsa. Their offense is going to score a ton of points.
Yeah.
And if they get any kind of defense, you know, they're going to be very, very difficult to beat.
Yeah. But Dan, I think for my pick out of this one, I think I'm circling South Florida.
I'm taking Memphis. I think Memphis is the team to beat. I think Charlie Strong is going to need a year to fully get acclimated there and really get. I think he needs a year to get the defense where he wants it, because their defense last year was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. So I think Strong's going to need a year to get the defense where he needs it to be, at least. Maybe might take him two. And then I would see South Florida making a big jump and getting Charlie another job. But as far as just next year coming, I would go with Memphis. I think Temple, you know, we talk about teams falling out. I could see Houston falling into the middle of the pack. I see Temple maybe sliding all the way to the bottom.
Yeah. You know, I think it was 100% great coaching at Temple. That's how they got to where they were.
Jeff Collins, he's a defensive coordinator. He's had great, you know, he's had great defenses at Florida, you know, as their defensive coordinator. Temple has a lot of great defensive pieces in place, so maybe he'll prove me wrong, but I don't know. I don't know. SMU, if you're talking about who can pop up, you know, if some of these teams are falling down, Chad Morris, I mean, it's kind of getting, you know, if he wants to move on to a big job, I mean, he's not in any danger of getting fired. But Chad Morris, I mean, there's no secret made that he wants that Texas A&M job. He's an alumni there.
Yeah.
He better win some games sometime, or else people are going to start, you know, his name's going to stop falling off some of these lists, but he can definitely do it. He was an excellent recruiter at Clemson. He proved his offensive mind there. If he can get some games winning, you know, SMU and Central Florida are two teams that make a lot of sense to lump together because they both have two coaches that everybody kind of thinks are going to be coaching at their alma mater next year, and that's Chad Morris at Texas A&M, as already mentioned, and Scott Frost, you know, everybody thinks he's going to be back at Nebraska sooner rather than later. So it'll be interesting to see if either one of those two teams can break out. And then the absolute dark horse would be Tulane. I think Tulane finishes in the middle of the pack this year. I think they'll, you know, they're picked to finish like at the bottom of the league, 11th out of 12th. But you know they have that unique option, shotgun option offense that Willie Fritz developed at Sam Houston State, and then took to Georgia Southern and had a lot of success there. It's a triple option offense, but they run it out of the shotgun and they run it out of the pistol. He's had a lot of success with it. I wouldn't be shocked to see Tulane jumping up a little bit just based on that unique offense.
Yes, I think I'm gonna stick with UConn, Cincy, and ECU finishing all tied for last, much like they did last year. I think that's fair. Although I think UConn's trying to do something there.
Well, UConn fired their coach. They have a new coach. We'll see. I mean, you know, their previous coach did a very terrible job, so they're probably going to be bad, like really, really bad, as they try to get the ship, you know, try to get all this water out of the boat.
And, of course, though, you also have Navy there, who is always going to be Navy. So
I mean, they're always going to be Navy. They're always going to be running the triple option. They're always going to be difficult to defend, and you're always going to be able to score a ton of points on them because, you know, the only reason they score points is because they run a unique offense. They can't do that for defense, too.
Yeah. Well, all right, and that is our group of five. Pick who's going to the Sugar Bowl on the spot. Who are you taking?
Memphis.
Memphis.
I'm taking Memphis.
I think, Dan, they really called me. I think the Fun Belt's sending a team this year.
You got App?
Actually, no, never mind. I think Wyoming's going. I think Wyoming is going to lose one game this year.
I would enjoy that more than any other one. And, hey, I mean, if anything keeps Scott Frost from getting the Nebraska job, it would be fellow Nebraska alum and former Nebraska assistant coach Craig Bohl, you know, winning 11 or 12 games at Wyoming while Scott Frost wins, like, 5 at Central Florida, and Craig Bohl gets the gig.
All right. And then let's transition to a story that you talked about last week, but it sounds like we got some details wrong, so let's correct that, and let's jump into it.
Well, wrong. I mean, you know, the story broke like 12 minutes before the show.
That's what happens when I'm on vacation in Biloxi.
When you go to Biloxi and leave me, you know, in the middle of major news. You know, we didn't have all the details, obviously. The news was all breaking. Like, at one point, I was, like, reading Twitter during the show because stuff was coming out. So, you know, I call that Brian Alvarezing, and it's
I'll tell you where I was at. I was at the roulette table when I heard the news first broke because this nice southern gentleman across from me said his phone was blowing up. Because Hugh Freeze just got fired, and I believe he was an Ole Miss booster, would be my guess.
Feel like every Ole Miss booster has a permanent place in Biloxi.
They should, because I was at the craps table in Biloxi, and there was one guy dropping, I want to say $5,000 a roll on a $25 minimum table. Clearly at the wrong place to be betting that much money on craps.
But the thing about Hugh Freeze is the main thing we wanted to correct is last week we told you that it was a burner phone he was using, because that's what the original stuff that was coming out was like.
It's much dumber, Dan. It was his work.
No, he's a real, like, Hugh Freeze is a real grade A dumbass.
Yeah.
All this, just to recap how all this came out, Hugh Freeze, the SID at Mississippi, and the athletic director engaged in a misinformation campaign going into signing day a year and a half ago to try to protect Ole Miss as an NCAA notice of allegations was about to come out, alleging, major recruiting violations. They engaged in this misinformation campaign with media members to spread lies that all of the NCAA violations were going to be based on stuff that Houston Nutt did as head coach who preceded Hugh Freeze. This turned out to be a lie, but by the time that was revealed, the signing class was signed and they couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Houston Nutt reacted to this by filing a lawsuit against the University of Ole Miss for defamation of character. And as part of his lawsuit, he subpoenaed the phone records of the SID, the athletic director, and Hugh Freeze for a 2-week period when all these news stories first started coming out. And as part of combing through those phone records, they found that Mr. Freeze liked to call a particular whorehouse escort service
in
Tampa.
Class it up.
Well, look, I grew up across the street from a whorehouse, so I get to say whorehouse.
That's how that works.
Yeah.
Sex work.
That's how that works.
I believe it's the problem.
Yeah. When you grow up next to the whorehouse, you get to say whorehouse. So Hugh Freeze tried to play this off that the calls were, wrong numbers, then Ole Miss did a little bit of digging and found out that if this was a wrong number, this is a wrong number. He called like 50 times,
but
mostly late at night.
He could be that dumb, Dan. He could be calls the wrong number a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he does seem to have problems getting out of the rain, if I can quote my granddaddy. So that's the end of Hugh Freeze.
Well, but maybe not the end of the Hugh Freeze story, Dan, because allegations all over social media have been kind of popping up this week that maybe Hugh Freeze got a little maybe touchy with some girls when he was down in the high school game coaching.
Yeah, there's a lot of journalists, there's a lot of TV stations, there's a lot of newspapers trying to get to the bottom of this story. You are hearing it here first because, we will follow the truth wherever it takes us. But there's allegations.
We're not scared of losing our jobs.
Sure, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
None of us are using our real name at this point.
No.
It's basically tied back to the high school that Hugh Freeze used to work at before he ended up at Lambeth College. It's a private high school, and both Zach and I went to private religious high schools.
And at the school, Dan, it wasn't Hugh Freeze just in your football. He had his fingers in lots of pies, basically. He was also the girls' volleyball coach, and he was the girls' basketball coach. And I believe he was kind of dean, kind of a proxy.
He was the dean. He was the head of student life, I believe was the term.
Which sounds like a nice
means,
way to say dean.
Yeah, which was like he was the one in charge of, like, dress code violations.
Yeah.
Which I know Zach and I both talked about this off the air. It's at our schools, like, that was always a female teacher or
principal's
job.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to, and it's not even just like a Southern, weird thing with women. It's just kind of weird to have.
It's just like in general, like, that's an odd thing to have a guy, looking like making sure that the girls don't have cleavage.
And the other
and that
weird
they,
thing is,
you know,
Dan, for most Christian schools, wouldn't really put up with that. So it tells me there's probably a weird culture thing at that school. Because this is a school that's in the suburbs of Memphis, correct? Like, this isn't...
Yes.
It's maybe not your traditional private school, if that makes sense.
Obviously our two schools were too small to have, like, big... Well, no, you had football. So that was a weird thing for me to be hearing about, a small private school with a football team. But, there's been multiple former students at this school who have made allegations that Hugh Freeze engaged in inappropriate behavior with female students.
Yeah. And maybe it's not something as nefarious as sleeping with a student or assaulting a student. Well,
Maybe we don't know the extent because this is stuff that's all just now starting to bubble
but
up.
But it could be,
and
as
people
bad
are starting
as
to get bold and say these things.
It could.
So,
then best case scenario would be like maybe he made some inappropriate comments to a 16, which is weird and really creepy. But you can't really go to jail for that. But it could
I remember. I mean, the best case scenario is that there was a teacher at my school who had a reputation for just sort of leering and taking pictures of students when they weren't looking at him, you know, and everybody sort of looked at him and was kind of weirded out by him. That's your best case scenario for Hugh Freeze, is that he was one of those.
Oh, can I tell a quick story?
Worst case scenario, he's like a hardcore predator. And,
can I tell a quick story? You know, we had a weird janitor at our school, Dan, who they're using like his work truck that it was like the school's truck, but it was essentially kind of his. He used it a lot. And they get in that truck, and they find a picture of one of the senior girls in there that wasn't his daughter, had no relation. He just thought she was hot, clearly.
Yeah.
So what my buddies did then, they took the picture, they had it blown up at Kinko's, where it would fit in his whole windshield. They locked the keys in the truck and left that picture in the windshield. So for the rest of the day, it was just a picture of a 16-year-old girl sitting in his windshield, and he couldn't get into his car.
I mean, that is pretty good. There's just something about private religious schools where there was a guy whose wife was a major muckety muck at the school, and just he's the one I'm talking about. He was just a major creep, and I remember one time a bunch of us like looked over at his laptop, and he had like pictures of like one of the girls who was riding a bicycle. It was a picture taken from behind. And it just struck us all as, like, this is not right.
Yeah,
this is
a lot of stuff that goes, because there's a lot of unassuming people. Because a lot of people think, oh, this is a Christian school. These are good, godly people, yada, yada.
There's a culture of trust
for
the faculty at these schools. And there's always seems like there's one male faculty member who you just look at and go, this doesn't feel right. Something about this doesn't feel right.
Well, Dan, we even had a similar – at my same school, there was a younger coach who I believe got fired because he more or less asked like a student out on a date. I think the student was 18 and he was like 24. But still, you're in a position of power. It's always creepy when you do something.
Yeah, and that happens a lot at some of these private schools. That even happened in mine where like you have like a recent graduate who like finishes – who's like just finished his college degree or her college degree, and they come back as a teacher – because they need to fill a spot, and then there's like this weird, way too close age thing that becomes very, very. I mean, it just feels weird, you know. Because in a lot of cases, you've got somebody where they were like a high school senior when this student was a middle schooler, and now they're a teacher, and it just always feels very like this is not a good idea. I know there's a lot of like really young teachers who immediately start teaching in public schools, but they're very rarely teaching at the school that they graduated from, and those schools are
where
also
they may
large
have
enough.
Even known someone's sister or something for you. Yeah, or there might be a previous
where the school's not small enough to where like a middle schooler used to run into the high school kids all the time because there's only 30 of you.
Yeah,
you know, it's just there's this like very strange culture at a lot of these private schools, and hey. If you don't like us saying that, we went to them. We got everybody right to say that as anybody else does.
Yeah, and they're not weird. You know, it's not a weird culture because it's religious. It's just a weird culture because there's a lot of trust that's assumed.
Well, I think the religious thing is a factor though, because I think some of these guys.
Well,
who,
I'm just saying, Dan, we're not
who end
to
up
be
being
like two
creepy,
guys bashing people who love Jesus.
Well, I just think that people have a trust factor.
Yeah.
That kicks in where I think if you were in a public school. Or a non-religious private school, I think your ears would sort of be perking up at things faster.
Yeah, that's
I think
why
a lot
these
of these
people,
yeah.
to me, are pretty bad because they're taking advantage of trust that's kind of given to them unfairly.
Yeah.
And it makes it all the more gross, in my opinion.
So,
but hopefully, Dan, hopefully this is just some weird allegations with Hugh Freeze. Maybe he's into escorts, but you know what? There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, you know, there's – I mean, you never – it's early days. You know, who knows? But when you start to see, like, I've personally seen two different people making allegations. You can always find one crazy person anywhere who's willing to say, hey, you know, Mitch Pump, you know, eats dogs and then, you know, fucks
that's
their
true.
Corpse.
That's
like,
that's 100% true. So.
Like, you can always find one person somewhere who will say something.
Yeah.
Once you get two, my ears start perking up like, ooh, okay, okay. And with a lot of these things, it's usually not long before it's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then even the most obtuse idiot has to admit that something bad's here.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are allegations, obviously, that should be taken seriously, but obviously...
These are very, very... I mean, again, well, it's just... We've seen this play before.
Yeah.
We've been to this movie. We know how this movie ends. Yep. So, and we know how it tends to play out. So, I hope for the sake of everybody that this is just somebody, you know, bullcrapping, because that means nothing bad happened to anybody.
Yeah.
But... life experience has taught me that that's probably not going to be the case.
All right, man. And before we get out of here, I want to run through a couple of quick stories real quick. A new little segment I'm calling Quick Hits, where I throw some news, Dan, I get your thoughts on it. We should give it more time, but it's almost football season. Sorry, you should have requested this earlier, Kyrie. Kyrie Irving requests a trade from the Cleveland Cavaliers. What do you think, Dan?
Well, obviously the initial reaction was, oh, man, Kyrie's an idiot. But as it's starting to play out now more here, it's starting to seem like LeBron is the one who leaked this out. And this is LeBron has kind of outed himself the last few weeks and months as a guy who he's probably the most fun player to play with on a court, but a guy you would never want to actually be on a team with because he's always going to have to make everything about himself. And he's going to put his personal desire, like, he's going to go play where he wants to play, and he's going to try to manipulate you into giving him an excuse to. This just feels like Kyrie was sick of doing the whole, hey, is LeBron going to be here or not be here? Trade me. I don't want to know. I don't want to care about this anymore.
Yeah. And we'll see what happens with that. Another sports story I want to hit with you real quick, Dan. And that is going
– and just before you move on, I can guarantee you the next time we have Seth Simmons on for the bullpen – he's going to have a lot of opinions about that.
Yeah.
So I want to set Seth up because he is going, you know, there's no bullpen this week, but when we get the bullpen back on, Seth is going to go long on that issue.
Yeah.
As our resident LeBron
week,
homer.
The new Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta will not be able to open its roof for the first four games. Thoughts?
I just, I'm so sad that Robot Goatsy will not be able to prolapse for a few weeks.
It's amazing how much money you can spend and still fuck things up so much, even with a bunch of really smart people. Dan, U.S. men's team beats Jamaica. Thoughts? The U.S. is winning the World Cup now, right?
What sport are we talking about
soccer.
Here?
Sorry. When I say U.S. men's team, it always means soccer.
Okay. It could have been wrestling. I don't know. I've never known Jamaica to be good at soccer, so I don't know how big a deal that is.
I guess they're good at something, right, in Jamaica, besides bobsledding?
Bobsledding. Yeah. We all know that. You know, we all saw cool runnings. I think the United States men's team made a horrible mistake hiring their current coach. It was going back in time. They need to get away from the MLS. I think they're throwing away some smart ideas that Klinsmann had just because Klinsmann was himself a dumb shit on-field coach. I don't think he was totally wrong about everything he was doing. The U.S. men's team and U.S. soccer, for it to grow, we need our best players playing in Europe so they can actually get good instead of being tied to this horrible MLS and being back in the old days where, you know, with Bruce Arenas, where the team has no tactics and they just go out there and play good, fundamentally sound soccer, but they don't do anything. They don't do anything to give themselves a little bit of an advantage because the facts are the United States are never going to have soccer players of the same caliber as Brazil or Germany or Spain or Portugal. Like, if we're going to win, or Italy, if we're going to win, we have to be a little weird, and that's not going to be the case with Bruce Arenas. But
no, and if you watch
he's not going to lose to terrible teams, though.
No.
He's probably
going to beat
the
teams. If you watch the game
the
other day, Dan, it was a really boring game, but there are some fun plays, you know, Jose Altidore, other guys. There's a lot of fun things to watch on the U.S. men's team.
U.S. soccer is just going back in time where they're going to be a very fundamentally sound team that beats all the teams they have more talent than and loses to all the teams they have less talent than.
Yeah.
And I don't think that should be what U.S. should be settling for. I think we should try to be weird.
LeBron James, though, is it really going to matter? You know, when you have three other
– well, no.
Five other major sports.
There's no, but we've got tons of money. Like, that's the one thing the United States has that other programs don't. And that, just spend that money to hire a weirdo, brilliant guy who'll come in and, you know, have us, I don't know, playing, you know, 11 guys on defense and see what happens, you know, or, you know, play some like strange idea of soccer, come up with a new next. I mean, all we have so much money. Why not hire a guy who's going to do something weird and give us an advantage? All right.
And Dan, finally, teaser trailers were announced for a revamp of Hey Arnold and Rocko's Modern Life. Are Nicktoons back?
I mean, it's kind of late for me. I don't know if I can jump back into some Rocko's Modern Life, but I feel like Rocko Fought City Hall had a major effect on me as a young man.
I think Rocko had a major effect on me, and I never really thought about it, as did Hey Arnold. Rocko made me cynical. Hey Arnold made me like people. Those were probably the two best Nicktoons. I know everybody talks about SpongeBob. Give me those two all day.
I just want to know, are they all grown up, or are they going to still be kids?
They're still kids. I believe Hey Arnold will finally find his long-lost parents. It'll be a movie.
So, oh, well, that'll be nice. I didn't know if he was finally going to marry Helga.
I think they'll finally kiss or something weird.
Go for it.
And I think that's it for Quick Hits. No other news. No Comic-Con was this week. Does anyone really care? Besides, like, attractive people wearing funny-looking stuff.
I mean, I would go to a Comic-Con because I'd want to see John Barrowman, but, you know.
I would go to Dragon-Con here in Atlanta on Labor Day, Dan. You get the college football kickoff, you get Black Gay Pride, and you get Dragon-Con, all within a couple of miles of each other.
So Dragon-Con, is that a bunch of guys who like to sit around and fuck a muffler?
it's just like Comic-Con, but in the Southeast, so much weirder.
Is it going to be weirder than a guy wanting to fuck a muffler? I'm not quite sure.
Well, I think you'll see that at Black Gay Pride. And then that's it.
How dare you?
Fuck you of the week. I don't think I could say fuck you to the president, but I think he has dementia and I don't want to be an ableist. So those are my thoughts.
There you go. I don't have any fuck yous. It's been a melancholy week. I don't want to scream at anybody.
Yeah, it's no fun to scream. All right, but that's it. Next week we'll be back. We're going to preview. We don't even know which conference. We're going to pick one.
Yeah, it'll be which guest is available next week.
Which one will I remember to DM on Tuesday? All right, sure. That's it. Happy to be back, though, Dan.
And
nice to be back.
And on that note, oh, yeah, you know, you finally got back from Biloxi, so, you know, running
Gulf
water.
Gulf Shores, Alabama.
Sure. Well, on that note, there's only one thing left to do, and that's play the music, Jason.